am a princess. Well, at least I believe I'm a princess, and the reason I believe that is because I have extra sensitive sensory system, which means that I think I'm a princess. And the sense that I'm going to talk with you about tonight is my sense of hearing and the sensitivity that I have to loud noises. Well, I categorize loud noises into two categories. One is the loud burst that might be something such as a car backfiring, or it might be a door slamming, or it might be something that crashes down to the ground in the kitchen, unexpected, and it really annoys me. The other kind of sound that is loud and troubles me is the long, sustained sound, such as an emergency vehicle siren, or it could be the smoke alarm that goes off in your kitchen. It might be, in my situation, I'm in school, so it might be that fire drill alarm. Or it might even be screaming. Well, what happens to me when I hear a loud sound, whether short or sustained, the startle response in me is exaggerated, and the adrenaline shoots into my system, causing the fight or flight response to happen. And I discovered, as I started to get a little older as a child, that when someone chose to frighten me on purpose because they didn't know about my sensitivity and they thought it would be funny, my fist would emerge because I wanted to punch the person out who created the heart palpitations that I was then experiencing. Well, as I got older and had children, for those of you who have raised children, you know that toddlers go through a stage where they scream or shriek. Well, you can bet I nipped that behavior in the bud as soon as I could. And as my children got older and they learned about my sensitivity to loud noises, I taught them to warn me before they were going to make an intentional loud noise, such as starting the vacuum cleaner. So I taught them to say, "Mom, 1, 2, 3, noise," so that I was prepared for the noise that was about to happen, and I wouldn't have to use the fist. So then there's Stephen, who has been married to me for 40 years and has had to deal with this princess's sensitivities, and he's done very well at warning me because he knows that he needs to do that. But then what we did was we put granite countertops in our kitchen. And for those of you who know, when you have stone countertops, anything you put on that stone countertop makes a noise. So unfortunately, there are times he unintentionally makes loud noises, and this princess shoots him one of those dirty looks. Well, now I'm going to fast forward to about a decade ago. And I have three brothers, and one of my brothers lives in the Seattle area. And he had just read something on the internet that he wanted to share with me. And so he called me up, we chit-chatted, and then he said, "Hey, Tony, I bet you don't know what happened on May 30th, 1957. And I didn't skip a beat, and I said, "I bet you I do." That was the day that the four Panther jets were flying over Northeast Minneapolis, and they were doing a flyover at Sunset Memorial Park Cemetery. They flew first from west to east. They did a turnaround. They came back and did a second fly over the cemetery. Just as they got near to our house, they were in formation. And what happened was one of the planes was too close to one of the others. So they went into their turn, and the wing of one plane sliced open the fuselage of the plane next to it, and there was an incredibly loud explosion. My brother John said, "I can't believe you remember that. You were like, and I said, "Yes, I was 22 months old when that happened." And I said, "My first visual memory was on that day. Dad picked me up, Mom, I assume, had Teresa, and then the rest of us went down our long block and our two short blocks over to Ground Zero. And I saw a parachute in a tree and a man hanging in that parachute." And John said, "No, no, 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 no." He said, "That's not correct." He said, "You are right. There was a parachute hanging in the tree. But unfortunately, the parachute had malfunctioned. And what happened was the pilot actually crashed to the ground. And by the time our family got to Ground Zero, neighbors had taken the pilot, put him up by the house, and covered him." He said, "Though, did you know that it was just on 19th and Johnson that the other pilot landed perfectly in his parachute? But the amazing thing is, his plane crashed at the A field. There were 150 kids playing at the Northeast Minneapolis A field at the time, and not one of them was hurt by that plane." "Wow," I said, "that is amazing." And he said, "Of course, then there's Ground Zero. The pilot, or the plane that had been sliced in the fuselage, had of course spread that jet fuel around that area at Ground Zero, and it had the actual plane crashed into the second house from the corner, and that house was engulfed in flames. Three other houses next to it were completely they were in flames, but the fire department was able to do some remedy to make sure that they didn't burn to the ground. And there was also fuel in the gutter, and fire was going down the gutter as well. So there were many emergency vehicles there. The fire department was doing their best to make sure that things were taken care of. And Ground Zero, from that point out, a mile radius, there was debris from this plane all over the place. And that is amazing. But what was most amazing is that only 8 people were taken to the hospital, 3 with burns, and no other fatalities, except for the pilot whose parachute had malfunctioned. And this is in the city of Minneapolis. Well, I'm going to actually take you back some years now to when I was 35 years old. Our family was living in Bemidji at the time, and I had said to Steve, "I need Mommy's day off. I haven't had one. I need Mommy's day off." And so I was going to head toward the cities to see my mother and my brother, who still lived in the Northeast Minneapolis area. And it happened to be Memorial Day weekend that I was driving down to see my mother. And I was listening to psychologists talk on the radio, on Minnesota Public Radio, about the effects of war that soldiers had come back with. And they were describing the symptoms, and there was no one sitting next to me. Remember, I was alone, so I kind of looked at the empty seat and said, that's what I have been experiencing my entire life. So I got to Minneapolis, and I said, Mom, tell me that story of the explosion and the crash that happened on May 30th, 1957. Oh, she said, yep. She said, your younger sister, Teresa, had just been born a couple of weeks earlier. And so I was in the house with her. And Dad had all five of the rest of you kids out in the front yard, and you were messing around when there was this horrendous explosion. And you came tearing into the house, and you were totally hysterical, out of control. I thought, mm-hmm. And I said, and then we went down to Ground Zero, right? She said, yes, indeed we did. She said, but what was most interesting about you, that was the summer that you turned 2 years old. And you never went outside once. The only way we got you to go outside was to physically pick you up, put you in the car. We would go to wherever we needed to go. As soon as we arrived back, the car door opened and you made a beeline back into the house. And I said to myself, that makes sense. So what I've told you about is my journey through understanding that I had PTSD and how I have had to cope with it and still cope with it. There's one question that remains unanswered, and that is, whether I was born a princess or whether a princess emerged based on the explosion and crash.